ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A tragic accident or the ultimate act of betrayal? That is the question. We've sat through 1 week of the Erin Patterson trial. We're still a long way off knowing the answer. I'm the ABC's court reporter, Christian Silver.
And I'm Stephen Stockwell. It is Friday the 2nd of May and we've just finished the third day of Erin Patterson's triple murder trial. This is Mushroom Case Daily.
The small town mystery that's gripped the nation and made headlines around the world.
On the menu was beef Wellington.
Three people are dead and one man is fighting for his life this morning after a suspected mushroom poisoning.
But Erin Patterson has strongly maintained her innocence.
It's a tragedy what's happened. I love them.
So in today's episode, Christian and I are going to wrap up what you've heard this week. We're going to introduce a new friend of the podcast and give you all the latest info from court today, the sort of seeming lack of care from Erin around the ramifications of the lunch that she held and some more medical intrigue. But before we get into the details, Christian, can you give us a quick wrap of what we've heard in the last hearing of the week today?
Sure. Simon Patterson, the estranged husband of Erin, took to the witness box for his second day of evidence. He was running through some of his conversations that he'd had with Erin, some well before this lunch and then some in the subsequent days afterwards. He also talked about how Erin Patterson had described some other illnesses previously. Now, we know at the lunch she spoke about a cancer diagnosis, which she's now admitted was false. Simon also took the court through some of the ups and downs in their relationship. It has come out quite clearly that there was tension and friction there over their financial arrangements, as well as how they shared their two children. The final thing that happened was the jury was bid farewell for the weekend by the judge, who told them to relax and not talk about the case.
Well, that'll be us in about half an hour or so once you finish this podcast. But it has been a really, really interesting week. Today we had some more evidence from Erin Patterson's estranged partner, Simon Patterson. And this evidence started with the video of the rocket car that Erin's son built with his grandfather, Don Patterson. And that was the story finished yesterday's pod with.
Yeah, the rocket car. I didn't expect this to be a topic that would be brought up again, but it actually was. So the court was shown this quite wholesome video of Don Patterson and his grandson, appeared to be in a driveway, and there was a really small red matchbox size car on the ground and all of this smoke billowing out the back. The two of them, a bonding session where they've tried to concoct some kind of rocket powered car. And anyway, all this smoke coming out the back of the car, but the car's not moving and you can hear a voice in the background. And someone yells out, "It's working, but it's not going anywhere." And it turns out that voice was from Gail Patterson, who's one of the other people who was at this lunch and passed away. And while this video was being shown to the court, Simon Patterson, her son, he started to tear up, but he was also smiling, reminiscing on what was a nice family moment. The reason why this rocket car video was introduced into the evidence yesterday was Colin Mandy, the defence barrister, was trying to establish that Erin Patterson had close relationships with her in-laws and by extension also showing the in-laws' relationship with their own grandkids.
It was very sweet. It was a very nice video. What else did we hear about from Simon today as he was giving evidence?
Look, pretty quickly after that was introduced, we went back in time a little bit and Simon Patterson was asked questions about his wife. He said that in the past she had described some medical conditions that she supposedly had. He believed that she did have some sort of heart arrhythmia problem, which had resulted in her receiving treatment in the past. He also said that she had claimed to have some other problems. He was a little bit vague on this issue and couldn't quite pinpoint what the supposed condition was. He sort of mentioned motor neurone disease and MS, but he wasn't quite sure. But he said Erin had said that she'd had these problems. And this all led up to the medical issues that Aaron Patterson had supposedly been talking about in the lead up to the lunch, because if you'll remember to our previous episodes, Aaron has allegedly told all the lunch guests that she wants to talk about a serious medical issue and how to deal with the fallout from that at the lunch. So this was the alleged cancer diagnosis, which she now admits is false. Are we still following along here?
Of course, yeah, I'm still following along.
Yeah. Okay. Simon Patterson said today that the first he knew of the cancer, quote unquote, diagnosis was when he was with his father a couple of days after the lunch in the hospital, and his father at this point was really sick and struggling to even talk in a lot of pain. But that was one of the things that his father remembered from the lunch and passed on to Simon.
You know, speaking of Don being in hospital when he's talking about Aaron's cancer diagnosis, I mean, was Aaron getting in touch around that time to see how they were faring, how they'd been travelling after the lunch?
Yeah, well, while the Pattersons and the Wilkinsons were in hospital, Erin Patterson herself had also said that she was feeling ill and was in touch with Simon about this. Now, it's well accepted that her level of illness was nowhere near the other four. But one thing that Simon said on the stand, and it did seem to irk Colin Mandy, the defence barrister, was Simon Patterson said he was intrigued by the fact that Aaron Patterson apparently didn't actually ask about the welfare of the other lunch guests. And Simon said, we didn't have a conversation, I think, at any time about how they were going. So that was an interesting thing that he said.
Aaron does say she was sick after the lunch. You know, what was the correspondence around her going to hospital or getting some medical help at that time?
Well, Aaron Patterson was pretty reluctant to get medical treatment, and Simon Patterson on the stand said, yeah, she has a history of hating being in hospital, so that wasn't a surprise. But one thing that I found interesting was some text messages between the two, which took place 2 days after the lunch. So Aaron Patterson was at the Leongatha Hospital, and the medical experts were really concerned for her welfare, thinking that she had ingested the same death cap mushrooms as the other lunch guests. They wanted to move her to a bigger hospital in Melbourne. So then there was this text message exchange here where Erin has written, and I quote, "They're arguing with me now, saying that I might have to go to the Dandenong Hospital. This doctor is not listening to me and being a bit mean about it," is what she texted to her husband. So in the context of doctors trying to potentially save her life, that's what she was thinking about. And eventually she ended up at a different hospital in Melbourne, in Monash, Clayton, and she later texted to her husband, "I feel nauseous and a sore tummy, but they gave me ondansetron and saline and fentanyl." And fentanyl is a really strong painkiller. So, yeah, that's what she said to Simon in the days after via text. More text messages between the pair were shown. If we fast forward a little bit to before the lunch, and remember, this is in the context of a relationship that is pretty up and down at times, has its good moments and its bad moments.
Yep.
About a year before the lunch, Gail Patterson turned 70, and there was a birthday party that was going to be held. Seemed to be some miscommunication amongst the family, and Erin didn't know that the party was happening until the day before. And there were some tense messages sent, but ultimately they resolved it. So that was interesting to see. And then later on, as we edged closer to the lunch, about 6 months before, we started to see messages between the two regarding finances and child support payments and school fees. And these are all the things that are private between a couple, but they've come out in the context of this trial. You can only imagine with Aaron Patterson sitting in the court dock and Simon Patterson in the witness box to have these messages shown to the court and then reported out to everyone must have been a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm sure not something that they ever thought would ever happen.
It would not be something that was pleasant at all to, you know, to hear read to a whole room of people as they're going through this. Now, court today was only a short day, wrapped up in the early afternoon. How did the judge kind of close the proceedings for the first week?
Well, it was a bit of a throwback to the start of the case when the judge was talking to the jury about their responsibilities. And actually, what he said was, go and enjoy your weekend. The best way to deal with this case is to switch off and have a relaxing weekend, but don't talk about it to your friends and family. He noted there's going to be heightened interest in this case and a real warning to the jury not to go and say too much about it. But yep, they'll all be back next week and we're only at the start of this trial.
Yeah. And I mean, look, there's been so much information that's come out, I'm sure, over the weekend. We're both going to be doing our best to just relax, have a bit of a break from this. It's been a very big week.
Yeah, I'm wrecked, to be honest.
It's been exhausting, but yeah, there's so much more to go through. And I think, look, while I'd love to have a relaxing week and not talk about some of this stuff, I imagine it'll be hard to avoid some of the conversations that will pop up.
Yeah, when we go back to see our family and friends as well. People are going to be asking.
Yeah. Now, as well as talking about what's happened today, Christian, I'd love to just quickly wrap up the week that we've had, end of the first week of the triple murder trial of Aaron Patterson. Can you talk us through some of the big moments or things that we, you know, should come back to or remember at this point?
Well, remember the prosecution opening? Mm. That was just a massive overview of what's to come. Everything that Nanette Rogers said in that opening needs to be backed up with evidence. So it was really hard to like summarize everything she said, but we'll be able to, over the next few weeks, delve into each of those topics in detail. So I'm really looking forward to that. So we're talking about things like Aaron allegedly going to these areas of Lock and Outram where deathcap mushrooms were supposedly growing. Mm. We're talking about Aaron Patterson purchasing a dehydrator in the lead up to the lunch. Also, even the lunch itself, we haven't heard from the one other surviving guest at the lunch, Ian Wilkinson. He will come up at some point in the trial and no doubt his recollections of what happened will be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to hearing that at some point. We'll need to see more of that. And then there's also the conduct after the lunch, the admitted lies that Erin Patterson told police and her actions to dispose of the dehydrator at the tip. These are all things that have been brought up. I'm really interested to see how that plays out over the coming weeks. Also, from a defense perspective, there were concessions made by Colin Mandy and other statements too about how this was all a tragic accident. I'm intrigued to see how he demonstrates those things to the jury, keeping in mind, of course, these allegations must be proven by the prosecution. It is their job to convince the jury that Aaron Patterson is guilty beyond reasonable doubt.
Yeah, there have been so many interesting moments. There's going to be a lot more to come as well. I mean, one of the things I've been running over in my mind is just like around the different colour plates at that lunch and the lie about having cancer to organise the lunch as well. That's really stuck with me.
It's pretty odd.
Yeah, and you can hear a lot more about that in our episode from Wednesday. That's Minnie Wellington's different coloured plates and a false cancer claim.
Was there a moment from the first couple of days that stood out to you?
Yeah, there was a moment, it was only a very small moment at the start of Thursday's hearing, at the very beginning of Simon Patterson's questioning by Dr. Nanette Rogers, the prosecutor. She was asking Simon whether he'd ever seen copies of Aaron's air traffic controller accreditation and also proof of other studies she'd done. I can't remember if it was a marketing or a business degree. And Simon said he had. He had seen those copies and, you know, some of those documents, but I'm just really interested. That stuck with me.
Will it come back up again?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm interested to see if that comes back up a bit later in the trial. So I'm going to have an ear out for that, I think, as we go a bit further forward.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And also, while we're in Morwell, we're also working with the ABC's true crime investigative reporter, Rachel Brown, who you may be familiar with from her Trace podcast. Rachel's been in court with Christian all this week and has been helping us put this podcast together, talk through some of these ideas. And Rachel, we're very excited to have you here making your Mushroom Case Daily pod debut.
Thank
Welcome,
you, long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's, I'd love to know, what have been some of the moments from this week that you've been coming back to?
From an overview, what I find really interesting is a lot of the cases that Christian and I have covered, a lot of the murder trials, they involve, you know, varying arguments about the evidence or how to interpret that evidence, or it might be the trajectory of a bullet, for example. But I feel in this case, a very big question and a very simple one, really, but complicated at the same time, is intent. I think so much of this trial will come down to intent, whether Erin deliberately poisoned her in-laws. And I found it interesting when her defence barrister, Colin Mandy SC, did make a big play about that and said, you know, this was a terrible accident. It was a tragedy. And to try to put in the jurors' minds about how that might have happened and why she behaved the way she did afterwards, post-defence conduct, it's called, Colin Mandy said to the jury, might someone panic in a situation like this? You know, is it possible that people might do and say things that aren't that well thought out and might make them look bad, like lying? You know, like we heard, she dumped the dehydrator at the tip. She told police that she didn't forage, but turns out she lied about that. So he has to mitigate those lies. And so he just said to the jury, I felt like he was saying to them, what would you do? Like, would you panic? And it's interesting, a lot of the true crime panels I sit on, that's often the question from the audience. Why do people like true crime so much? And I think it comes down to this very thing, because as humans, we're fascinated by people's behaviour and why they do things that they do, you know, and what they're driven by. And was this panic?
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting idea for me during this trial.
You've been in the room this week as the trial's been unfolding. Has there been anything that you've seen in the court, or, you know, evidence that's occurred and there's been interesting reactions or anything like that that you've noticed?
The video that Christian mentioned about the rocket-propelled car, that really got me. It just reminded me of, you know, the videos that my pa used to take on Handycam, and you can hear Gail in the background going, oh, it's working, so why isn't it going? And you can tell the joy, you know, in that little family moment and the bonding moment. And I looked over at Simon and he was really teary. I looked at Erin and she was like turned her head to look at the wall. And it's tough, like that moment was tough. And I should say for all the Patterson family that were in the courtroom at the same time, you know, and I think there's lots of media stories, but at the heart of this is three people who've lost their lives. And that video really got to me today, and also what Christian was saying about their relationship and the anatomy of a toxic relationship towards the end is on full display, text messages, arguments, disagreements, you know, it's like someone going through your trash. Yeah. You know, and so, yeah, I think it's been a big and hard week for everyone involved, I think.
Yeah. Has there been any other emotion that you've seen from Erin that's, you know, has sort of stuck with you?
The seat that I've been sitting in this week, she's behind me, and so I haven't wanted to look around because I just think if it were me, I'd feel like I'm in a zoo. I notice a lot of people trying to look at her, which, you know, they want to see her reaction, but I didn't want to make her feel like an exhibit. So I haven't looked at her a lot, but the one time that I did notice, because I was sitting somewhere different, was when they mentioned that Don loved rocket fueled activities like this car.
Yeah.
And she smiled at that. And so that must have been a really nice memory for her. And I haven't seen her smile the whole trial.
Yeah. Thank you, Rach. Thanks for joining us on Mushroom Case Daily.
Thanks, Stocky.
And Rach will be joining us on Mushroom Case Daily every now and then for a bit of detail, things like that. It's amazing to have someone of her calibre working with us and helping us with this podcast, Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Trace podcast was really great too. So
yeah, if you're looking for some weekend listening after finishing this episode of Mushroom Case Daily, would highly recommend. Now, we've also had a lot of questions coming in to the Mushroom Case Daily at abc.net.au inbox. Thank you so much for getting in touch and talking to us about this. It's like having, you know, an extended family to talk through all these things with. I want to get to some of them now. We've got a bit of time, so we'll run through them. The first one we've got is from Jill. Jill has asked about Erin Patterson's parents, because obviously she was having this lunch with her in-laws and their family to discuss her cancer diagnosis, and Jill's wondering why Erin didn't invite her parents or turn to them for advice.
So we know that Erin Patterson's mother and grandmother are both deceased. That was brought up. I don't recall hearing about Erin's dad, to be honest. If that comes up in the trial, we'll chat about it. But off the top of my head, I don't remember Erin's dad being mentioned.
Yep. We've had a lot of questions about live streaming this case. Now, obviously, we're bringing you updates every single afternoon, but there are people who are interested in kind of watching some of these proceedings. Why is it that these proceedings aren't live streamed? What are the court's reasons for not doing that?
To be honest, Docky, I don't recall ever seeing a criminal trial being live streamed in Australia. Happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. What we have seen in recent years are civil trials being live streamed. You'll remember the Bruce Lehrman defamation trial, separate to the criminal trial, which was live streamed on YouTube. A lot of federal court things are often live streamed, and even in the Supreme Court, the civil cases are often shown on the internet. But look, criminal cases aren't shown, and I can understand why. If you just think about some of these cases, they're often... If you just think about some of these cases, they're pretty horrible. They're about murders, or in other courts, they could be about sexual assaults or rapes. And I guess there is a level of conservatism. They don't want that sort of stuff being broadcast. It's obviously very private. I know it's different in other countries where they do show things. But one thing I will say about live streaming criminal proceedings is that sometimes later on, if a person is being sentenced, the courts do live stream that, or they allow a media camera in to film that process. And I know in the US there's things like court TV, but I think the legal attitudes are a little bit different here. We are a little bit more conservative, and definitely in a general sense, judges here are less open to broadcasting court proceedings. Of course, now you can go into court and sit in the courtroom. There is a fundamental legal principle of open justice, but that does not extend to open broadcasting.
We've also got a question here from Joyce. She has asked, was Erin Patterson required to pass a lie detector test?
That's a really interesting question. Certainly that's not something that the jury has been told by either the prosecution or defence. Speaking generally, I've not seen lie detector tests used in any of the recent criminal trials. And, you know, there's been some really big ones that I've had the privilege to cover. It's not really the done thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, good to know. Thank you. And we've got a few questions here about what it's like being here in Morwell. So we're living at the moment in Morwell. It's a town 1.5 hours southeast of Melbourne. And, yeah, we've been covering the case as it's been going through the Latrobe Valley Law Courts here. And, yeah, people are really curious about what it's been like for us around town. I mean, Jess has asked, how's the town going with this? Are locals happy to see the business, or is it bringing a negative energy? And, I mean, my experience, we've been eating lunch. We've been going out for dinner in town as well. People seem to be, you know, lovely. They're very welcoming of us, certainly spending our money in the town at least.
People have been really welcoming. It's been nice to get some good feedback. Probably got some negative feedback from some others outside the court building, but look, that's how it goes. People say journalism is a glamorous gig. It has its moments, but it also has its other moments, especially when you're on the court and crime round, where you'd rather people not see that you're filing a story while literally sitting in a gutter, or that people outside court may not have the highest opinion of you. But that's the reality of it. But I've enjoyed the week here in Morwell, and there might be 4 or 5 more weeks. Bring it on.
I'd say there's going to be a fair few more. Again, we've had some lovely gifts to some of the journalists as well. There was one of the other networks was gifted a beanie over the last couple of days, which was very sweet. Have you had many interactions, Christian?
A few friendly comments. Had a lovely guy come up to me in the courtroom today and just said, thanks for doing the pod. We're really enjoying it. And we're also really enjoying bringing this trial to everyone at home. We wish you could be here in Morwell to join us, but alas, we know you're supporting us and listening in.
Yeah, we're doing the next best thing. Jess had a follow-up question about this, and Reese had this question too. They were asking if there are any mushroom dishes on the menu in Morwell, or if that's, you know, they've shied away over the last couple of days.
Don't seem to have.
No, if anything, there's been a gentle lean in. There were a couple of specials at the one of the pubs that we had dinner in last night. There was mushroom soup, was the soup of the day, and there's a beef and mushroom pie. I had
A pie and not a Wellington.
Yeah, no, very clear. Yeah, pie, not Wellington. And then there's a cafe quite close to the court that we've been going to for lunch a lot of days that has a mushroom toasty, which we can say was on the menu because it was we ate it on a previous visit to Morwell prior to the trial. Our last question, you may have missed this given the interest and the way that this case has sort of captured the media energy of the country, but there is a federal election this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, I'd forgotten. But Sarah and Luke have been in touch and they have both asked if Aaron will be voting in the election over the weekend. It is an excellent question, and I have been in touch with the Australian Electoral Commission, who have confirmed that she's certainly eligible to, and so we expect that she will be.
Yeah, well, it's a fine if you don't. Compulsory in Australia for people to vote in state, federal and council elections, I believe. So, yes, Erin is free to exercise her democratic right.
Absolutely. That's all we've got for this episode and this week of Mushroom Case Daily. I'd like to say thank you so much for listening, for getting in touch via email, mushroomcasedaily@abc.net.au. We're very happy to answer your questions. And the response has been massive. You've taken us to the top of the podcast charts, which is an incredible feeling. Thank you so much for that. And you've also sent through some really thoughtful feedback as well as some questions. And if there's a few of you who've noticed some changes to the pod in the last few days that sound very similar to your suggestions, that's because they were very good suggestions and we've taken them on board.
Absolutely. And there's so much more to come. We're only one witness down, Stocky. And we know this trial is going to run for several weeks. So strap yourselves in.
There's probably going to be a lot of conversations about this that you may be having with your friends and family over the weekend. And when you have those conversations, let them know about a little podcast you've been listening to. Maybe suggest they jump onto the ABC Listen app and give it a follow. So when you're having those conversations, you don't need to explain the detail. You can start going into the theories and the things that you'd like to talk about it with as well.
Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Mushroom Case Daily is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. It's presented by me, the ABC's court reporter, Christian Silver, and producer, Stephen Stockwell.
Thank you to our esteemed guest, Rachel Brown, for this episode, and our executive producer, Claire Rawlinson. Props to Christian's boss, Sarah Gench, Audio Studios manager, Eric George, and our true crime colleagues, Tim Roxburgh and Yasmin Parry. This episode was produced on the land of the Gunai Kurnai people.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.